Let's call this meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:30 p.m. on Monday, April 20th, 2026. Before we begin, I want to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Doug Bridges from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, Senator Tilton, Senator Stevens, Senator Tobin, my Vice Chair, Senator Keel, and myself, we have a quorum to conduct business. The only item on our agenda today is a presentation from Brad Merstall and Russell Sampson from the Alaska Justice Information Center and the University of Alaska Anchorage. They will be presenting on Alaska rape trends contextualized within the United States. Dr. Merstall and I believe Dr. Sampson, please put yourselves on the record. You may begin your presentation now. You're both on a team's presentation, I believe.
Yes. Can everybody in the room hear me?
I think so.
Okay, for the record, my name is Dr. Brad Merstall. I'm the Assistant Dean for the School of Justice and Human Services at the University of Alaska Anchorage and Director of the Alaska Justice Information Center. My colleague, Russell Sampson, is not going to be presenting with me today, but I have to give her credit for putting this presentation together for the committee today.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, will somebody be running the slides from your end? I'm not on a share screen situation, so I just wanted to understand how the navigation of the slides was going to work.
Yes,
just say next slide and we will move the slide.
Okay, moving on to slide two in your deck. Just some background information on the uniform crime reporting data. The data that are presented to you today, both in this slide deck as well as the research brief that was prepared for Senator Klayman, utilize uniform crime reporting data. It's a longstanding program initiated first in 1929 by the FBI. The data contained within the UCR are submitted by law enforcement agencies across the country to include state, local, tribal, and some limited federal law enforcement agencies. Notably, program participation is voluntary, although some states actually require all law enforcement agencies to participate. It's called the Uniform Crime Reporting Program because the FBI standardizes the crime definitions it uses for the metrics that are reported by the FBI and that are included in this presentation. And it includes what are referred to as Part 1 offenses, typically is what you see in crime reporting, and those are almost always felony offenses, but the UCR program does also collect information on what are called Part 2 offenses, which tend to be misdemeanor crimes. Importantly, the UCR program classifies rape and sexual assault, most sexual assaults, as Part 1 felony offenses. The UCR data are used by criminologists and public policy makers to gauge the overall volume of crimes known to the police. But more importantly, and I'll talk about this a little bit later and some caveats about the data at the conclusion of the presentation, to monitor changes over time in crimes that are known to police. Slide three, please. Next slide. I do want to highlight a couple complicating features in today's presentation. I know that not everyone enjoys looking at graphs and tables as much as I do, so I'll make sure to orient the committee to two things I would ask you to pay attention to as we go through, and if at any time you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask. The first is I'm going to be presenting data to you that uses two different definitions of rape and sexual assault. In 2013, the FBI changed its longstanding definition in the following ways. It removed the requirement of physical force. It expanded the definition to include comprehensive forms of penetration. And it also made the measure inclusive of both male and female victims and offenders. And these are all very substantial, important, but very substantial changes that don't make the two definitional periods comparable to one another. So we use two terms in this presentation to denote these different definitions. What we call the legacy definition spans 1985 to 2012 in the data that are presented before you. And the revised definition then spanned from 2013 to 2024, which is the most recent date or year for which data are readily available. So I just want to highlight these different definitional things for the committee so that these two time periods aren't compared one to another. They must be looked at separately and independently. And I'll just pause here to see if anyone on the committee has any questions about the definitions we'll be using moving forward.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that clarification. I am curious, as I see the UCR program has an 80-year definition, but the legacy definition only goes as far back as 1985. What information is previous to 1985, or is there something I'm missing?
Thank you for the question. That's a great question. Through the chair, we're only so it is an 80-year definition, and the legacy definition extended back and was used consistently from the inception of the UCR all the way through 2012, but the data that we are presenting to you today is only 1985 to 2012 in that legacy definition. And the reason for that is because UCR is a voluntary program. Law enforcement agencies in Alaska had only sporadic participation in the UCR program until about 1985. And so here at the Alaska Justice Information Center, when we do a trend analysis, we begin at 1985 so that we have good stable estimates with ample population coverage.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Professor, one question on the new definition, just so we understand what's covered. When it talks about without the consent of the victim, do we include in that situations where the law acknowledges that even a verbal consent cannot be given freely? So, for instance, a prison guard and an inmate, or other power differential or age differential situations where consent isn't really possible?
Through the chair, I think probably the best way I can summarize this, I'd refer the committee to slide 18 in your deck, and it provides both definitions. The legacy definition was quite limited and frankly reflective of a different sophistication in understanding this particular criminal offense. It was defined as only the carnal knowledge of a female forcibly against her will. And so you can see those different elements in there with respect to the use of force. And that's how a lack of consent was documented in the UCR, and frankly, in many statutes across the country until recent times, that a lack of consent was documented or evidenced essentially through evidence of a physical force. Did that answer your question, Senator?
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No. So the question, I understand the legacy definition, force.
Okay.
Forcibly and against her will. I get that. That requires force, or at minimum the threat of force. The absence of consent in the revised definition, does that cover situations where there might be verbal consent or the absence of resistance, but where free consent is not possible? So very large age differentials, a young person, or power differential dynamics, doctor, patient, inmate, correctional officer. Are those without consent under this definition, please?
Yeah, through the chair. Thank you for that clarification. I apologize for my misunderstanding of the initial question. I'll offer a general response with the caveat that I would defer to the Department of Public Safety, who makes the sort of crosswalk definitions to the UCR from Alaska statute. But in general, what the UCR definition provides is latitude for jurisdictions within their statutory framework to classify without consent according to their law. So in different jurisdictions that have different requirements about consent or definitions of what consent means, those would be included in the without consent of the victim portion. But how exactly, for what specific statutory, you know, specific statute sections or subsections, how that would come in and translate into UCR, I could not say specifically.
I don't see any follow-up. I would just have a short follow-up on the same question. It sounds like from your answer that different states would use the UCR definition and decide what fits in with that definition, and they might not ask the FBI before they did so. And so at some level, the consistency of, say, how Utah might list crimes within the new definition might be different than what Alaska does, but there's really no way in telling unless we actually went back and asked each state.
That's correct. So different jurisdictions define statutorily consent in different ways. The uniform component within the UCR data is, again, that phrase, without the consent of the victim, but that does vary by jurisdiction.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. Proceed ahead. I think we're back on page three.
Yes. Continuing from slide three, we'll go to slide four. Just to orient the committee, and this brings in the second analytic complication here. So in addition to providing you with data over two time periods that cover two different definitions of rape and sexual assault, we're contextualizing in this presentation in the graph presented on slide four, time. So we have time and the national rate and the Alaska rate. So we have a comparison over time, Alaska situated within the United States more generally. Alaska is the blue bolded line, and the United States rate is the dashed green line. On the vertical axis, what you're looking at is the annual rate per 100,000 population. And for this slide, this is the rate of rapes reported to police for the period 1985 through 2024. The shaded area to the right of your graph represents the new definition. So there we see a comparison between the national rate and Alaska over roughly a 10-year time period. And then on the left, two-thirds or three-quarters of the graph represents the legacy definition comparison. In general, what we see here is during the legacy definition period, two major takeaways for me, and they're fairly evident, I think, visually. First is relative stability in both rates. You see more variability in the Alaska rate because of low population, and so when you have a low prevalence, a low base rate phenomenon, coupled with low population, you do tend to have more variability than what you see in the national rate. And the second big takeaway then is the consistent difference between the rate of reported rapes for Alaska versus the United States. And then on the right side of your graph, in the shaded area, you see the trends under the new definition. And probably the first thing that jumps out at you is that sort of a step increase for both the dashed green line as well as the solid blue line. And we would expect that given the more inclusive definition of rape and sexual assault that was instituted in 2013. Then when we compare the gap, what we see is the gap grew. So the gap between Alaska and the United States grew, even taking into consideration the overall step increase for both. And then finally, this gets a little bit into the metric weeds, but in general, you'll see a parabolic distribution, an inverted U for Alaska, and relative stability with slight increase nationally. So different sort of functional forms in the new definitional period. But if you compare the beginning and the end of the periods for both, Alaska is quite stable with a period of volatility in between, and then a slight increase on the national trend. And I'll pause here for any questions.
I see no questions at this time. Please proceed.
Okay, I'll go ahead and jump forward to slide number six. Slide number six is oriented the same. The difference is the data element has changed from rates of reported rapes to arrest rates for rape, comparing Alaska over the U.S. for the two definitional periods. Overall, on the left-hand side, what we see is that the Alaska trend paralleling roughly that of the national trend, particularly following the early 1990s, with significant decline from the early 90s through 2012, although Alaska did have a bit of a rebound after 2008. But overall, if you're just looking at the trend, a pretty consistent decline over roughly a 40-year period. Things are a bit different on the right-hand side of your screen, looking at the revised definitional period. The U.S. rate, arrest rate for rape really stabilized and flattened out 2013 to 2024. And again, what we see in Alaska is an inverted U shape. If you compare the beginning and the end period, it's pretty stable trend, but it did have this period of volatility in this new definitional period. With only 10 years of data for this graph and the prior one that I described to you, it's hard to tell, you know, when you see that inverted U and that increase between time one and time 11, if that was real change or just adjustment to the state and it's sort of a measurement artifact. It's a bit early to tell, but we certainly don't want to ignore it and oversimplify just the beginning date and the end date and say there's no change and no dynamism in the rate. I don't think we're prepared to say that either.
I see no questions. Please proceed.
Okay. Shifting now, we'll go forward to slide eight. From graphs to tables, and this often elicits a moan, at least from my students. Graphs are, you know, visual, and people tend to track with those. Tables are a bit harder to follow. The long and the short of it here, with respect to this analysis, was to look at the temporal features of reported rape rates to see if there's an ebb and a flow throughout the year. And in this table on slide eight, we're looking month to month, and we pull together average rates for each month under each definitional period. So the blue table at the top is the average rate of rapes reported to police in Alaska the rates of rapes reported to police legacy definition, and then the green table under the new definition. In general, what we see is distinct patterning of the rapes reported to police and the national in Alaska and the national rates as well, summer months, and then December in general. And so those are highlighted and bolded in black on the table, hopefully for some easier visual reference. I kind of got lost in my own slide there, and I do apologize. The blue table is for Alaska. The green table is for the national trend, and within each of those are the different definitional periods. My apologies. So I'll pause there. I assume I may have elicited some questions due to my rough explanation of these tables.
Senator Stevens.
Just asking you the difference. What do you mean by the bold and the bold numbers? What are we looking at there?
So those are the highest rates. So through the chair, Thank you for the question. So just as an example, if we look at the top table that's highlighted in blue, and the first row is the legacy period definition spanning 1985 to 2012. And from left to right, it goes from January to December. And these different rates are rates per 100,000. And the numbers that are bolded are the top three highest rates. Unless there was a tie, there might be four bolds in any given row. But what we're trying to highlight here are the months with the highest average rates of rape reported to police by month.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Professor, I hazard to attempt to use any of my academic background in terms of trying to make a causal or a correlational assumption. However, I think within the national average, it makes sense to me the months that are identified are ones that typically have major holidays in them, where there's often an overconsumption of alcoholic substances. I think within the revised definition, I am struggling with the September, and I first thought maybe it's related to permanent fund dividends being paid out, but those are typically paid in October. So I'm just curious about the September trend and if there's any thought that you might have or any conjecture you might be able to provide.
Thank you, through the chair. Yes, I can offer some conjecture. The first thing I would say is really sort of a strict definitional point. If you span back, go a little bit left in that revised period row, you'll see June is 12.1, September is 12.2. We're not testing for statistically significant differences here. What I'd highlight, though, is June is not all that different from September. And so it's really sort of these late summer months. One thing I would suggest, though I don't have data to directly speak to it, is that's a high visitation season in Alaska as well. And so when you're thinking about things that are reported to police, it's not just Alaskans reporting to police, it's all people in Alaska reporting to Alaskan police. So that's the first thing I would think of in terms of the Alaska context and sort of the seasonal patterning and ebb and flow of our life here is, you know, once we hit July, you know, red runs peaking, and then it tapers off into the latter months of the summer. I would also add as a second piece, now this spans the, you know, May and June as well, but in general, children are out of school. College is not in session by and large. And then, you know, just sort of summer in Alaska, as we all know, life is different and everybody is, you know, outside doing things and much more proactively engaged in social contexts of all kinds, going outside, sure, but just, you know, so depending on where we live in Alaska, we tend to hunker down in some of the winter months. And then third, in terms of more speculative conjecture, the month of December for both the Alaska rate and the national rate sort of begs the question. But again, many people are on holiday, school's out, and it denotes a period of sort of non-routine activity.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Professor, just to make sure I understand how these rates are calculated, these are reported per Alaska census population or per our estimated number of folks in the state at the time. You seemed to imply, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, that during that May to September period when over 5 months a couple million people visit the state, the rates go up because there are more people here. Are we still dividing by about 750,000 Alaskans? Is that why rate rises?
Thank you for the question. Yes, that is one limitation in the data. We don't adjust the denominator in the calculation of the rate for the total count of people in Alaska. We do use census figures for the computation of the rate.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't see other questions. Please proceed.
All right. Thank you. Going forward to slide 10. This is just 1 year. So the previous data has given you a sense of different time dimensions. This one's much more limited, is only for 2024. And it's the rate of reported rapes by state, ranked from highest to lowest. And unfortunately, Alaska has the dubious distinction of being tops in terms of rate. In 2024, the reported rape rate by state, and again, that is the rate under the UCR definition of rape and sexual assault, is 10.2 per 100,000. And not only first, but highest by some margin, even when we look at, say, the next four or five. Moving forward to slide 11, I'm going to beg the committee's indulgence and ask you to ignore the label that says Alaska's base rate, to scratch that out or ignore it. That was a poor choice in labeling. What this graph depicts is how much Alaska's reported rape rate is higher than the next four states over time. So we have Arkansas, Colorado, Oklahoma, and Utah, and these other four states comprise the top five over the duration of the 1985 to 2024 period. And you can see that the other four states cluster together rather closely and are roughly during the legacy definition period, on average between 45 and 50%. Alaska is 45 or 50% higher than these other states. And we thought this was an informative graphic because it's not just all other states or national average. These are states with high rape rates. And even then, Alaska is, like I said, between 40 and 50% higher than even other high rate states. And the overall picture remains the same under the new definitional period. But the news gets a little bit worse in that, it's between 50 and 60% higher on average than high rate states under the new definition.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. So I was a little lost when I first looked at this chart, and so it's just a counterintuitive way to present the data, that the higher the number on this chart, the less rape relative to Alaska. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Russell and I were discussing this and regretted our display choice. It would make more intuitive sense if these lines were below the bolded black reference line. So what to show how these states are actually lower. So what is actually depicted is how much Alaska is higher compared to these states. And so you caught us out, Senator, and I apologize. Is one of those things that made sense at the time upon review, and I'd be happy to submit a revised slides that do present it in a more intuitive way at the conclusion of today's meeting.
Mr. Chairman, sadly, I tend to be a very intuitive creature, so I appreciate the detailed and thoughtful reply.
So just for clarity, the suggestion is if you were to redo slide 11 over again, the line that is rated that is zero and is black on the graph.
We would just move the lines below the bold black line to represent that these states are lower than Alaska, rather than depicting how Alaska is higher.
I see. And would the lines, if the black line were above the four other states, because the Alaska rate from the other slides is variable, although fairly consistent within that variation, the statistics below are actually a variation based on the Alaska rate?
Yes. So what we do is, this is a percentage difference. So what percentage is Alaska higher? And so what is depicted in the graph, the math is correct. It's just a poor choice of plotting it on the positive side of zero rather than the negative to actually show what Senator Keel highlighted, that these states are lower, right? And the answer is yes. But it would look exactly the same just below the black line.
But if we were to take, for example, Wyoming, another small population state with what looks like about a rape rate about half of what Alaska has, if we were just graphing Wyoming by itself, that line would not look like the Wyoming line on page 11. It would be some different shape to the line because these are appearing as a percentage of the Alaska rate, which may vary based on what the Alaska rate is in any given year.
That's correct. That's correct. Okay. So, yeah, again, Wyoming would be hovering around that 50%.
Sure. Okay. I don't see other questions about slide 11, but we would appreciate an updated version.
You bet. Again, apologies to the committee. We'll just go ahead and move on from 11 to 12. This is arrest rates in the same format as the previous slide with the green and white shading. Alaska is third in 2024 for arrest rate. So that's the number of persons arrested per 100,000 census population. And then moving on to slide 13, same fault with this graph as before. In general, Alaska, even when we compare to other states with high rape arrest rates, on average, about Alaska is about 30% higher during the legacy period and about 40% higher in the new definitional period. Not surprising, arrest rates correspond roughly, though certainly not exactly, with reported rates. But this was not a surprising finding. But I think an important thing for the committee to note is there's more variability in these comparison states in terms of arrest rates versus, you know, so they're not clumped together quite as tightly when compared to the reporting rates. And this largely reflects differences in criminal justice system administration and operation.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Professor, help me connect these two charts a little bit with a different comparison to Alaska. When I looked at the first two charts you showed us, slides 4 and 6 or whatever they were, it looked like about one arrest for every 6 reports in Alaska. Very, very ballpark. That seemed to be the rough sort of correlation. How do other states compare in terms of how many arrests per report?
Thank you for the question. You're highlighting a limitation in the UCR summary data, and so I'll do the best I can to make this clear. The data for arrests and reports are compiled and reported completely separately. So a report on the one hand, an arrest on the other, it's not a measure of whether or not a report resulted in arrest. It's just in any given year, it's the sum total of reports in any given year, the sum total of arrests made by law enforcement agency. So just to clarify there that it's not necessarily a proportion of, it's not a one-to-one connection and proportionally of reports to arrest. So I just wanted to put that out there. It seemed like that was an element of the question. Perhaps it wasn't. So in terms of
Senator Keel, do you want to follow up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's appreciate the clarification there. So I appreciate knowing that this is not and those early slides were not tracking case for case. That's worthwhile. I would think over any given period of years, generally, you get a sense, though. Right, that over any given period of years, you have so many reported crimes and so many arrests for those crimes, you're going to sort of wash out the case for case tracking and get a broad strokes comparison. So I am curious as to whether we can do the same, admittedly broad strokes comparison, if on average over time, other things being equal, there's one arrest for rape in Alaska for every six reports of rape in Alaska. Roughly, what does that percentage look like among other states?
I would have to get back to the committee with that. I don't know that top of mind.
Thank you.
So a question I have is I'm looking at the reported rape rates in Alaska, sadly has the worst rate in the country. When I next turn to page 12 and I get the rape arrest rates, Wisconsin is at the top of the list and at 1.2 is higher than any other state. Utah is next. And when I turn to the reported rape rates, Wisconsin is in the bottom half. If I'm counting number, they're 31st. Is there any connection that you can identify between Wisconsin having a much lower rape rate and a much higher arrest rate?
I cannot.
Okay. Thank you. Please proceed. I think we're on to
We're making progress. Thank you for your patience. Slide 14, please. Another bit of comparison for the committee is to compare how population density is related to reported rape rates. The blue bars on the left side of your graph are the bottom five in terms of population density, and then the vertical height of each bar represents the reported rape rates in 2020. And then on the right-hand side of your graph, with the diagonal hashing in green, are the five jurisdictions who report to the U.S. with the highest population densities and their respective reported rape rates in 2020. The clear inference here is low population density in general is correlated with higher reported rape rates. Any questions?
No questions. Please proceed.
Slide 15 then provides the committee with some tabular data that's reflected in the preceding graph. Just to give you a strict numerical comparisons in a different format. Moving on to slide 16, which is an attempt to sort of bring all of this together. I know I've thrown a lot of data at you. So I highlighted five things here. Certainly these aren't the only five things that can be discussed. Number one, Alaska consistently demonstrated higher rates of reported rapes, regardless of the UCR rape definition or comparison group. Two, Alaska maintained higher rates of rape arrests, regardless of the UCR rape definition or comparison group. Three, July and August specifically, but I would say in general, summer months were consistently among those months with the highest reporting rates, but important to not ignore December in that mix as well. Four, states with lower population densities feature higher rape rates than states with higher population densities. And we did run some tests here, and it's highly significant, the relationship between population density and rape rates. And fifth, in 2024, Alaska's average reported rape rate was the highest in the nation at 10.2 per 100,000 census population. Just some quick caveats moving on to slide 17. Anytime I make a presentation using UCR data, I think they can be of use, particularly with respect to trend analysis, but I always like to be as transparent as I can to the limitations of the data that are presented to you or any audience. And the first is what those of us who call ourselves criminologists refer to as the dark figure of crime. And that's crimes that occur, but that we don't know about and with respect to the UCR that aren't reported to the police. This is particularly salient for discussions about rape and sexual assault. Roughly only 1 in 4 rapes and sexual assaults are ever reported to police. And those data are from 2024 National Crime Victimization Survey. That low reporting rate is stubbornly consistent, and it's been consistent for a long, long time. Second, with respect to the UCR data, a particularly summary UCR data is that the FBI deploys what's called the hierarchy rule, and when all the data are tabulated, only within a particular criminal event, even if several crimes are charged, or only the most serious is recorded. And so that has limited impact on rape and sexual assault statistics, because rape and sexual assault tends to rise to the top in terms of severity. But it's something to be aware of. And I wanted to make sure that the committee understood that. And overall, what I would say is, particularly with respect to the dark figure of crime, the UCR is really not well suited to measuring prevalence, that is how much crime is actually occurring. But it does work pretty well for trend analysis and taking the long view over time. And that's because there's uniformity in the measurement error. So what's being missed this year was missed last year, was missed the year before. And so that measurement error tends to be held constant over time. And so when you see fluctuations in trends, you're on pretty safe ground, though not bulletproof, but pretty safe ground to make inference about change, particularly when you're willing to take the long view and not be too temporally myopic. And the rest of the slide deck are just appendices, some definitional items, as well as some detailed tables to help fill out the graphs a little bit. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions on the slide deck, or if the committee has questions on the research brief, be happy to discuss those as well. I will say that the research brief that was provided to Senator Klayman late last year does provide some age-graded analysis between youths and adults that is not included in the slide deck that I've been speaking to you about. Thank you.
Senator Tobin, let's keep questions at this point to page 17, and then if we want to go somewhere else after page 17. You're off 17. A quick question on page 17. You've got the 23.6% of sex and sex assaults reported to the police nationally. What was the Alaska figure on the same for 2024?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't have reporting rates for the state of Alaska.
Ah, okay. Senator Tobin, any other questions on page 17? Seeing none, Senator Tobin, all pages are available.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions. The first is actually pertaining to the appendix, page 20 and 21. I'm just noticing on the second chart at the very bottom, after 2024, you have 2006 and 2007, and I'm not sure if that's an error or if there's something that I'm missing, including those two dates at the bottom of 2024.
Though, through the chair, there were some years I will double check with Russell, but that may have been a holdover from the top of the table, but we did have some years for some states, and this was particularly important for computation of the national rates, where we had zero data. I will check with Russell. Thank you for identifying that. I suspect, though, I don't know that those numbers from the top, 2006 and 2007, got brought down in that table inadvertently.
Thank you. And one additional question.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm curious, as I know this was that the UCR is pertaining only to the United States. Is there other type of comparable data to Canadian territories and provinces that more mimic kind of the Alaskan geographic diversity and spread? I'd be curious if we see similar trends in places like the Northwest Arctic or the Yukon territories in terms of just being more aligned with kind of our geographic makeup and population types?
Thank you for the question. Certainly, Canada and other circumpolar North nations collect rape and sexual assault data. It would have to be a different sort of comparison than the UCR framework. And so it would have to be more direct effort to sort of to match statutory sort of crosswalk specific statutory frames to specific statutory frames. Because the UCR is such longstanding and the manual and very thick manual that is used to provide uniform definitions across U.S. jurisdictions, that would not be readily transposed into another onto another country. But certainly there is comparable data out there. We just have to think carefully about how we might go about aggregating and then making fair comparison. But that is certainly something AGIT can look into for the committee.
Thank you. Thank you. I would be curious, Mr. Chairman, and in terms of just there's no other state that is one-fifth the size of the United States or has as much rural communities. And to me, the most readily comparison is some of the Canadian provinces and territories.
Thank you. I don't see other questions. One of the persistent questions I have had in this, both the slides and the documents that you provided earlier reflect the same thing, that Alaska's rape rate has largely stayed the same over many years. The legislature has made a number of changes to the laws, including longer sentences, different definitions of rape, although the consent definition has been more recently, so there's probably not much data on that. But it seems like the legislative efforts haven't really led to any meaningful changes in terms of the rape rates in the state. Am I missing something, or is that a fairly accurate perception? And if it is accurate, any thoughts about why what we're doing in Juneau doesn't seem to be having any effect?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. I think you are correct. It's pernicious and you're right. It is stable over time. And it's not just that it's stable over time. It's you know, anytime when comparing to national average, right? If you think just sort of in general terms, half are going to be above the average, half are going to be below. But it's the extent to which Alaska is above the average year over year over year. So it's vexing to say the least, but you are accurate in your overall assessment when we look at the data, whether it's in the legacy definition period or the new period. With respect to the efficacy or lack thereof of legislative efforts to move the needle, I'll circle back to the data question. Is I think oftentimes data such as the UCR data are relied upon too much in the development of public policy and programming efforts, in that they don't speak to etiological features of sexual assault and rape. That is the causal dynamics that are involved in sort of the big why questions. These are largely descriptive data. And particularly when you're relying on UCR data, it's the understanding that 3 out of 4 incidents that occur don't appear in the data. So a little bit of it is the data input that the legislature is unfortunately limited in. Since 2010, the Justice Center, in partnership with the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, has conducted the Alaska Victimization Survey to try to unpack a little bit about the dark figure of crime, to understand the prevalence of sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and stalking, and asking people about their experiences rather than relying on administrative data. And I think that's helped advance the understanding of how much actually happens. But again, the ABS is a public health surveillance survey. It's not intended, again, to gauge sort of the why and the etiological causes of sexual assault and rape within the state. Third, what I would highlight is I've often, I think I've commented to you, Senator Klain, and others within the Alaska criminal justice policy field is, I think the unwritten book for the state of Alaska could be titled Alaska Violent Land. And I think I mentioned that because I think it's important to not be overly myopic in looking at one violent crime category. Alaska is also has disturbingly high rates of felony assault in general. And so there's just a lot of violent crime in Alaska, in addition, well beyond the rape statistics that I presented to the committee today.
Thank you. And I guess the other query I have when I'm looking at slides 14 and 15, which is the reported rape rates, and comparing that with states with low density population, similar to Alaska. And of course, Alaska has the lowest density of any in terms of population to land. But when I look at states like Wyoming and Montana that are not quite as sparsely populated as Alaska, but pretty low population density, North Dakota, South Dakota as well, they've all got rape rates reported well half the rate that we have in Alaska. And it makes me wonder what steps we can do in Alaska that would start to bring those rates down to where we start looking more like other low population states. Any thoughts on steps we might be able to take to reduce these numbers?
Well, as a researcher, you probably won't be surprised to hear that my first recommendation is, more information about something you highlighted that we don't have information about, and that is reporting rates. So, for example, Alaska's, again, keeping in mind that these are statistics of crimes known to police, we don't know, while we don't have necessarily a reason to believe that rates of reporting to police in Alaska should be higher, they could be, we just don't know. What we do know, however, is that the law enforcement landscape in Alaska is very different than in every other jurisdiction in the United States. When you think of the Alaska State Troopers as a statewide entity who provide not only, it's not just that they're a statewide policing entity, like I'm originally from Montana, like the Montana Highway Patrol or state police in other jurisdictions. They're also the small town police in a lot of Alaska small towns, both on the road system and off. We have, other climatological factors. And so I think there are some, all of which is to say is I think there are some structural features of Alaska that increase sort of the risk matrix that could help to understand more about it in terms of why it's so much higher than everywhere else. Because as you know, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota, not only rural, they share many other contextual features that do make them somewhat similar to Alaska. So the other thing I would say, and I don't imagine this would necessarily be great news to the committee, is I don't know that legislation can fix every social problem. And so I think it's key to be targeted on the prevention side, not just the reaction side. And so when a lot of crime policy, though certainly not all of it, is sort of after the fact, what do we do after something has occurred rather than primary prevention and thinking of crime policy in a broader social policy frame?
Thank you, Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, I was just looking back as the data only goes as far back as 1985. However, we had some very large infrastructure projects built in the early 70s, and we don't have data that provides some insight into the relationship between some large-scale infrastructure projects where we see a significant influx of a particular type of worker who comes to the state. And I'm curious, Professor, if you have any insight on a correlation or relationships between major infrastructure projects and increased incidences of rape from any other community. And I'm thinking again of Canada and the Alberta oil sands and their particular significant rates of sexual violence and the significant increase with the build out of their man camps.
Thank you for the question. That's a wonderful question. There's actually some terrific research done here in the U.S. Sponsored by the National Institute of Justice that documented the clear, sharp increases in violence against women in general, but particularly with respect to rape and sexual assault in the Bakken in North Dakota, and the impact that it also had in tribal communities there in North Dakota as well. And so sort of the demographics of rapid, you know, community change, community influx in general, but also, you know, if we're just being honest about it, a huge influx of unattached young men into communities and what that might mean for public safety in general, but with respect to this particular topic. And AJIC would be happy to provide the committee with some of that research, if you wish.
Mr. Chairman, I would be very curious, as I know the professor just said sometimes prevention is hard, but in this case, I think there might be policy considerations that we as a legislature could consider that would hopefully not replicate what we've seen in other communities that have had these large infrastructure projects built.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't see any other questions. Any closing remarks, Dr. Merstall?
No, thank you. I appreciate the time. And if you have any questions for me or my team to address upon follow-up, as a question hits you heading down the hallway to your next meeting, please don't hesitate to ask. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the only thing we wanted a specific follow-up was on the two charts that had the straight line at the bottom, and get those updated. And if you can send those to my office, we will distribute it to the committee.
We will do that. Thank you.
Okay. With that, we're going to adjourn for the day. Our next meeting would be on Wednesday, April 22nd at 1:30 p.m. With that, we stand adjourned. The time is now 2:27.